And good afternoon. Very nice to have your company. 2101 if you're contacting us. Or the panel at radionz.co.nz. On Twitter, the panel at radionz. What the world's talking about with Zara Potts and the new MH17 theory. Well, one of the former ones revived. America braces for travel chaos. The CEO who didn't want his huge bonus. The point of alcohol ingestion where you are precisely at your most creative. Useful knowledge, Zara. The damage Edward Snowden has done, it's claimed, to ordinary old law enforcement. The school principal fired because of spelling mistakes. Steve, about time that we drew the line.
Shameful, shocking, disgraceful.
On the panel today, Steve McCabe with Sue Wells, and they're both here.
Hello.
Hello, Sue, how are you?
Oh, darling, I'm well. Long time no see.
Yeah, good to see you.
Well, you're not here, Sue, but you are in Christchurch.
That's right, and it's lovely down here, a beautiful sunny day like Christmas is going to be.
Oh, well, that's good. Why the high road toll after four? Why not scrub the Auckland Convention Centre then? Tony Abbott on the role of modern women. The power of a smile. Are you too old to fly a plane at age 56? And the dancing DHB chief executive. Now, tomorrow the panel starts an hour earlier and goes through until 5 o'clock, between 3 and 5, the panel's Christmas special down on the Auckland waterfront as usual. Not the regular format. But today it is the regular format. Zara Potts, good afternoon, and what's the world talking about?
Well, we're going to start with Malaysia Airlines flight MH370. It's 9 months since that disappeared. Can you believe that? 9 months. And the conspiracy theories about the disappearance of the plane continue to grow. And this is after a second senior airline industry source has revealed that, or his belief, that the plane may have actually been shot down by the US military, who were apparently fearing some kind of 9/11 style attack on a US Navy base in the Indian Ocean. So this new theory comes from one Marc Duguesne, who is the former boss of Proteus Airlines, which is a French airline, and it follows another similar kind of conspiracy theory put about in October by Emirates CEO Tim Clark. And so basically what he's doing, what he's speculated, is that the plane's computers, when it was on its flight, may have been subject to a remote hacking or an onboard fire, which then prompted a diversion from its original flight path. He's saying then that this may have been enough for the US military to see it coming, or to see it coming on their radars and make a preemptory strike against it. So that's the theory.
Sounds a bit like a bit of a long shot theory, doesn't it?
Well,
Well, I mean, they're all long shot theories.
I see so many holes in that one. I don't quite know really where to start with it. I mean, first of all, this remote hacking idea It's unfortunate now that that we've got this idea, we've mythologized hackers, that hackers can do anything.
Can do anything.
Anything,
yeah,
can be hacked. And to the best of my knowledge, these are not devices that are just on the internet like your home computer might be.
Yeah, I don't. Or Sony.
Tap in and find a plane.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't just hack into a plane in midair. If there'd been a fire on board that affected the navigation computers, the flight crew would have known about it. You'd see this thing turned basically 180 degrees as far as we can tell, or pretty close to it. The flight crew would have known it was changing direction. So it must have happened with their full knowledge. And attacking an American naval base, where exactly is this base? Do we know?
Well, it's in the southern Indian Ocean.
Diego Garcia is thousands and thousands and thousands of miles from here. So it's an enormous reach to say, oh, it just turned and changed direction, it must be headed for Diego Garcia.
What interests me, though, is that these are two guys who are heads of airlines.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, isn't it?
And they've both got no faith in those Inmarsat bleeps.
Yep.
And there are other scientists, especially, well, there's the odd one out of NASA and the American universities, who agree with them in terms of having no faith in placing
those
plane
handshakes,
the
electronic little handshakes. Yeah, that's right.
So it goes on and on and on.
It goes on, and the
but that's entirely reasonable. Having no faith in that particular technology is one thing. They're industry insiders; they'll know about that. But then taking the next illogical leap and going on with the American shot now because it's heading for British over Indian Ocean territory, that's fantastic.
Well, the US military has said absolutely not.
So, oh, well, in that case, that settles it, unequivocally, because they would have admitted, wouldn't they?
But the search will still go on over Christmas and New Year, apparently, according to Australian authorities. So there you go.
Now, speaking of flights,
yes, and this is something that you can pretty much set your watch by. Bad weather in the States will always disrupt Christmas travel plans in America. Now, there have been countless movies made about the stranding of passengers on Christmas Eve. They always have a happy ending. However, real-life commuters on the East Coast may not have such a pleasant ending this year, because two storms brewing across. I think that the main cities that look like they're going to be affected are New York, Chicago, and Boston, so pretty big ones. They've got these two storms that are brewing, and millions of travel plans could be ruined, leaving travellers delayed or stuck in airports for Christmas, and that won't be too much fun.
You know how we lament now the typos throughout news stories because of subbing central?
Yeah.
I saw the headline to do with this. It said American storms are imminent.
Imminent. Imminent storms.
They are, to be fair. Have you seen an American snowstorm?
Yeah, actually, they are fairly imminent.
They're pretty remarkable.
Imminent storms. Well, these particular imminent storms, they don't sound great. Lots of strong
winds. Given that they're not here yet, does that make them pre-imminent?
Very good. Yeah. Not how you want to start your holiday season anyway, so we'll keep a watch on that. But
But why are they still surprised by this? It's been happening.
It happens every year,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yes, and yet they're still caught out by it.
And every Thanksgiving as well.
Yes. Because the 24/7 news cycle has a short memory.
Ah.
Yes, there you go. So
now, this wonderful man.
Oh,
this
now, wonderful a tune-up for the books here. Seattle Timber Company CEO has handed back his $2.3 million bonus, saying it was the right thing to do. How often do you hear that? Now, this is Rick Holley. He's the chief executive of this company, Plum Creek Timber, which is an investment fund that manages timber across the US. Now, he handed back his bonus in stock options, so it wasn't cold hard cash, because he felt he hadn't earned it. His reasoning was that he didn't believe that he should receive such an award unless his stockholders in the company also saw an increase in their returns.
Oh, so it wasn't the employees, it was the stockholders.
It was the stockholders, yeah, not quite the employees.
So he kept the cash.
No, he didn't get the cash.
No, he gave it back.
It was all in stock, so it wasn't like it was kind of just put in.
No cash, just stock.
Yeah.
And, he probably just figured his stock was worthless because he hadn't enough to make it go up.
I think his company's had quite a good year, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, they have actually, but it hasn't had a good enough year for his stockholders, so he didn't think it was fair. But it is a highly unusual move in the world of business, because even his board was very surprised when he turned it down.
He'll be ostracised now.
Yeah. Well, he's not in the club, is he, of all the CEOs getting the big bonuses?
Makes him look bad.
Once someone starts doing it.
Yeah. But isn't it nice to see that there's some integrity?
I wonder what the tax implications of that would be for him. Maybe if he does that. No, that wouldn't work.
Oh, you cynic.
That's very cynical.
Isn't it? Where's your Christmas spirit? I mean, the guy's name's Holly. How Christmassy can you get?
I hadn't actually connected that.
Wasn't his name Rich Holly?
Rick Holley.
Pardon me.
He's a great man.
There you go. That's what we need to follow his example. Now, as if you didn't need another reason to drink beer, an advertising agency in Copenhagen has teamed up with a brewery to design a beer that will help boost your creativity.
Ho, ho.
And their reasoning is that it's often while we're relaxing, drinking a pint, that we find ourselves thinking more creatively about the tasks at hand. So now this creative beer is called The Problem Solver, and it's a 7% pale ale. The bottle design is based on research from the University of Illinois, so it's all, you know, above board here, which determined that a person's creative peak comes when they reach a blood alcohol level of 0.075.
That is the
peak of creativity, apparently, when your blood alcohol hits
that.
Make a note, yeah. So in order to get people as close to this magic number as possible, the bottle actually includes a scale which shows creativity suiting drinkers when to stop drinking.
But that depends on your capacity for alcohol, doesn't it? It's different for different people.
Sounds like a very complicated way.
Some people would be 0.9 and some people
would
be
drink. Yeah, exactly.
0.014. Well,
you'd have to know the volume of alcohol in the bottle, wouldn't you? And then you'd have to know the personal metabolic rate and how fast your liver processes stuff.
This sounds like a way to sell beer.
Well, it does, yeah. So, well, you know.
But maybe there should be like the creativity chart. There should be a little weight chart. So if you weigh 100 kilograms, you drink one bottle. If you weigh 200 kilograms, you drink two.
That'd be a very complicated chart.
I think for me, that would be about half a glass.
After three or four of them, you couldn't
know that.
I think for me, that would be about half a glass.
Yes.
Which actually makes sense, because it wouldn't be much, because beyond that, you know, your brain's into the realms of the fanciful.
Well, and there is some method to the madness here, because the studies have shown that when it comes to being creative and coming up with good ideas, drinkers do have it over the non-drinkers. There was a study that saw advertising executives come up with, ironically, a binge drinking campaign, and after being split into two groups, so one non-drinking, one drinking, the groups had their ideas assessed by top creative directors, and the drinkers came out on top with four out of the five best best ideas.
Had the top creative directors been drinking as well?
Didn't say.
When they assessed the ideas.
Didn't say, so quite possibly.
You could probably apply this to coffee, couldn't you? You could apply it to most things.
There must be a magic coffee point at which you become more creative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How far up a cup of tea do you get when
your ideas improve? I think this to me sort of equates to the three mouthfuls and suddenly you're giggly and spontaneous. Isn't
exactly.
that the same space?
Yeah, that's called the problem solver. So there you go.
Very good. It's interesting anyway.
It is interesting. Now, intelligence agencies in the UK have lost track of some of the country's most dangerous crime lords and have had to abort surveillance of others after CIA whistleblower Edward Snowden revealed their tactics. Now, this is the British spy agency GCHQ, which has suffered significant damage in its ability to monitor organised crime following the exposés by Snowden, which is interesting because we've heard about, you know, the threats to... affecting the efforts to track terrorists, but this is the first time it's been revealed that efforts to combat organised crime
Ordinary
have also
criminals.
Been compromised.
Right.
Yeah. So gangs apparently have now moved to more secure forms of communications, including the dark web, and it's almost impossible to track them. So this is quite an interesting kind of revelation. Really.
Pointing the finger at Edward Snowden. I saw saw this in the Telegraph. I didn't read it though. So this is what they're warranting, that in fact he's made it far harder.
He's made it much harder just to track ordinary criminals and organised crime and things like that. And I think they're saying that it now takes three times as long to crack any kind of communications thanks to these Snowden leaks, because the criminals know how it's kind of where they're going to be looking and how they're going to be tracking them.
You'd be scared to go into the dark web, wouldn't you? Whatever the dark web is.
God, wouldn't you? Yeah, it's awful.
Reader's Digest could help.
I beg your pardon?
Reader's Digest could help. They can find people anywhere.
Okay.
Oh.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you for that. Now, the spelling mistake that cost the principal his job.
Oh, yes, in New Jersey. And you would expect that any signs up around a school would be spelled correctly. But Antoinette Young, and she's the principal of Public School Number 20, which is a very catchy name, was demoted to vice principal after parents complained that a school sign in front of the entrance had two serious spelling errors that went unnoticed by staff for more than a week.
What were they?
December, which was spelled D-I-C-E-M-B-R. December.
No.
And the word reports, which was spelled R-E-E-P-O-R, report. the number one was also placed backwards on the sign, so it wasn't just alphabets.
This is a proper sign. It's not just handwritten. This is a proper sign.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did that get through everybody?
Well, they say that it was a custodian who was responsible for these sign spelling errors, but it was a week. Till they were actually picked up. In fact, it was parents that had to tell the school that it was spelled
incorrectly. What's that thing in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe? Those things you can't quite see out of the corner of your eye. They're like somebody else's problem.
Somebody else's problem field, yes.
Yeah, that's where that sign had entered.
Very well, yes, very well put. Somebody else's problem
field. The principal has been moved. She has been moved along. Probably to school, what is it, Public School Number 21?
Yes.
Possibly.
Speaking of things you can't quite see out of the corner of your eye and the implications this has for road safety.
This is the driverless cars. Getting closer every day, and they're actually starting to do these tests next year in the UK in Milton Keynes. Now, a couple of things that are interesting about this. I mean, the Institution of Engineering and Technology in the UK say bring it on, because for every 10,000 errors made by a human, just one is committed by a computer. So they're saying that with driverless cars, it will be a lot safer. But there are implications, of course, for things like insurance, things like taxi drivers. What happens when there are all these driverless cars, and what happens to the taxi drivers?
Yeah.
And car ownership. Because they're basically saying that we'll just travel in pods and be kind of linked together, and we won't need to own cars, and it will just be a brave new world of transport.
And what could possibly go wrong?
Nothing. Nothing. unless you're caught in a blizzard in America.
The
Merry
imminent
Christmas.
One.
Merry Christmas.
A couple of blizzards are imminent. Zara Potts, thank you. What the world is talking about, coming up on the panel. Steve McCabe with me in Auckland, Sue Wells in Christchurch today.